This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Live and Learn with me, Dashran Johan. Malaysia's first women's tribunal is set to take place virtually on the 27th and 28th of November. Organized by the Women's Rights Coalition, Joint Action Group for Gender Equality, also known as JAG, and End Gender Consultancy, this virtual tribunal will give space to women to provide testimonies regarding the injustices they've experienced. Now, joining me on the show today are two women's rights activists who are also some of the organizers of this event. First up is Ivy Josiah. She's the convener of the Women's Tribunal, as well as Grizel Janarun. She's the presiding officer of the Women's Tribunal. Welcome to the show, ladies. How are y'all doing?
Doing well, thanks.
Hi, very good, thanks. Thank you.
All right, Ivy, let's start with you. What exactly is Women's Tribunal Malaysia?
Well, the Women's Tribunal Malaysia is a court. We are creating our own court where women are going to come and give testimonies like a real court.
Right.
Two judges, but not real judges. You know, the judges are selected by us. The judges are Shanti Dairiam, Zaina Anwar, and Nadia Maliana. So they will give the testimonies and the judges will listen to these testimonies and come arrive at a recommendation, arrive at findings, listen to all these various stories that covers all kinds of topics and issues. And the judges will then come up with findings and recommendations. Now, besides the testimonies from women, we are also getting 9 advocates. These are lawyers and advocacy officers from our various NGOs who will make advocate statements. They will pull in all the testimonies and will present some ideas and analysis around which law should we change, where are the state obligations, where are the gaps, and provide recommendations. So besides the testimonies, there are also advocate statements. So it is an imaginary court, but real in the sense that this is a advocacy tool used by many women's groups all over the world. Basically, I mooted this idea to the women's groups that deal with the CEDAW shadow report and an advocacy group. There are about 15 of us in that group, 15 organizations. And I said that let's do something different. Yes, every year we do memorandums, we do press statements. But this year, let's dramatize the violations. It's like a press conference, but it's a court.
Right.
And we get women to come and give testimonies. So we just created our own court. Let's try and do something different because we can't be doing the same things over and over again and expecting results. Hopefully this will get the attention of not only the government, but also the public.
Right. And what are the issues, Grizel, that will be touched upon throughout this tribunal?
So the Women's Tribunal will gather testimonies from affected persons and it will be presented to the expert panel of the judges, as Ivy mentioned. And we will hear the testimonies from about 15 to 20 witnesses, and the witness testimonies will be presented under a few themes. And these themes are the first one, constitutional and legal framework, economy, health, education, political and public life, violence against women, family, gender identity, and climate change. And there will be specific issues under each of these themes, just examples such as unequal citizenship, women with disabilities, harassment, child marriage, and others. So the judges will then listen to the testimonies and they will present their findings at the end of the tribunal.
And I was told that y'all have strong guiding principles for this tribunal. What are these guiding principles?
Yep. So the guiding principles of the Women's Tribunal are inclusivity and intersectionality. And these principles are very important because it helps us to determine and select our issues. The first one, inclusivity, it's important because we want to include all women of all ages, of all abilities or disabilities, citizenship, or whether they are from the urban or rural setting, the indigenous people and the Orang Asli communities. Because this is because we want to hear the women who experience the oppression and discrimination since they come from different segments of societies. And that's why we worked with many partner NGOs to include women of these different backgrounds to share their experiences of discrimination and their unheard stories. The second guiding principle is intersectionality. I think we hear this word very often, but what is intersectionality actually? So the discrimination and oppression that women face is multidimensional and has many contributing factors that overlaps. And this intersectionality framework helps us to see the different aspects of discrimination are actually connected. Just an example, social categories or characteristics such as race, gender, status, sexual orientation, nationality, physical ability are all characteristics that determine the level of discrimination that people face. So by using this intersectional framework, we can help to design intersectional responses. What this means is that we identify the diverse factors that lead to these gender inequalities. Then we are able to recommend or suggest unique responses to counter those issues. So so both of these feminist principles are very crucial to ensure that all women and girls are heard. No one is left behind. So, and tell them we are listening and we want to amplify their voices so we can better plan for solutions for those discriminations.
I mean, these women who are going to come and give the testimony live, it's all online, right? Some of these women have chosen to come and show their faces and will speak, you know, openly. But some women, because they might be fear some kind of backlash from the community and so on, so they're going to come and either have someone read it for them or their voices might be altered slightly. We are trying to make sure that all the witnesses, all the women feel safe in this environment, you know?
Right. And I want to get into that a little bit more later. But, you know, just to talk about, you know, the origins of the event itself, because this is something that is, you know, unheard of in Malaysia. It's something very unique. And in concept, it's something that is going to be very powerful. Ivy, you said you mooted the idea. What inspired you to come up with this in the first place? Was there a specific incident that happened recently or a particular news? Or, you know, where do you get the inspiration that, okay, we need to do this and we need to do this now?
I've actually been toying with this idea for years, right? I know I've been doing this work forever.
Yep.
And it's really important to bring it back to the person who's actually experiencing the violation. Very often as advocates, we have all the different platforms and we talk about it, on behalf of them. And I think during this time in early 2021 and even in 2020, a lot of women are coming forward, especially young women are coming forward to share their stories. So I wanted to imagine a platform, you know, where they could actually give the stories in a sort of formal setting. For me, the inspiration comes also from I have actually witnessed and I've seen tribunals being held overseas, right? I've seen, through video and sometimes I've actually seen them live. For example, there was a very famous tribunal in Japan about sexual slavery where women were very much older now because they were used as sexual slaves during World War II. They had a tribunal in Japan where they brought charges against the Japanese government because the Japanese military used these women from Korea and deployed them to various, army camps, and they were basically used as prostitutes or as sex workers. So they come and give their stories. In 1993, there was an amazing tribunal called the Vienna Tribunal, where women came to this a big human rights conference and gave testimony again. When we hear directly from the women, it's a very powerful thing, Dashen. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful. I mean, even now my hair stands on end when I think about it. I've been just toying with this idea about platforming women's voices. And, you know, the tagline or the motto, for want of a better word, is reimagining justice. Mm-hmm. So when they give the testimonies, they may not get justice immediately because these are not real judges. It is an imaginary court, but very real to us. But in a way, their voices are being heard. We want the Malaysian public to say, hey, wait a minute, this is terrible. We should do something about it. The government should do something about it. So we have more voices who are advocating for justice.
Hmm. Now, Grizel, why is it important for women to be given a space like this, to be able to, you know, come out and speak up and tell their truth?
Yeah. So I think women and girls all around the world are often silenced. And the issues that they face are considered as societal taboo. And I think this is very true in Malaysia as well. It's very difficult for women and girls to voice out their experiences, especially experiences of discrimination, because society tend to shun them away and avoid discussions. And they don't want to listen to what they face, the problems that they face. And often women are victimized too and blamed for the issues, leaving no space for positive discussion and trying to understand the root causes of those issues. So that's why the Women's Tribunal really want to open up a safe space, also a formal space for women and girls to share their lived experiences. So it could raise awareness, like Ivy mentioned, raise awareness among the public to hear their stories of discrimination that they're not aware of. And awareness of these issues, the issues that women face, is very important so that society are able to empathize and to provide support also to women and girls, and women and girls in their lives. Hmm. Yeah.
Ivy, Grizel brought up this idea of societal challenges. What are some of the societal challenges you think that women face, particularly when it comes to speaking up?
Well, generally, there's a lot of sexism and, I dare say, even misogyny, right? Mm. When women speak up, very recently when Ayn spoke up, a young girl spoke up, the adults just clammed on her. In fact, I believe that she's even going through a court case right now. The teachers say, oh, you shouldn't be shaming the school. Or when a woman speaks up, the community will say, you're shaming your husband. When a orang indigenous person speaks about maybe land grabbing, it'll be like, oh, you're threatening the government, you're a threat to security. So different forces, whereas the community, sometimes the state authorities, even the private sector, they tend to try to shut the women's voices down, because it means that a truth is being told. And that it means that somebody has to be held accountable, right? It could be the private sector. It could be the community. It could be the family. It could be the husband, the boyfriend, you know, members of the family. Or it could even be the government itself. So there's a price to pay, right? So when we speak up, somebody is being blamed in a way. And the people who listen to people who have the authority to make it right, they have a lot to lose. They have to admit, first of all, they are wrong. And people don't like admitting that they are wrong. So there's a tendency to clam down. Hmm. So the challenges are powerful authority figures. This is one of the challenges. Whether it's the community, whether it's the state, whether it was in the private sector, they all appear to be more powerful than the woman who has experienced the violation.
Hmm. Now, on that day, Grizel, as y'all brought up earlier, you know, it will be pretty much like this, a sort of imaginary court, which is, of course, with very real stories that are going to be told. How will you ensure the safety and comfort of the women who are providing these testimonies?
So the Women's Tribunal actually prioritized the safety and comfort of everyone involved in this tribunal, especially for the witnesses or the women who will be sharing their lived experiences. So, and it's like you said, the witnesses may feel uncomfortable or triggered. They may even relive some of the experiences, and this may affect their psychological well-being. That's why, yeah, that's why the Women's Tribunal made it a priority to provide psychological aid to the witnesses, to provide them support. And we have our psychological aid team who will provide such support before, during, and even after the tribunal. And I think Ivy mentioned also earlier that we also give the witnesses the choices to remain anonymous if they like, and to either present their testimonies live or pre-recorded, or have their videos turned off and their voices altered, because we really do not want them to feel forced into something that, that they are not comfortable with. And we want to provide the best safe environment for all of our witnesses.
And also the NGO partners, because the NGO partners like SAWO, which is in Sabah, which is where Grizel comes from, let's say, or Sabah Wanita, or Justice for Sisters, or Women's Aid Organization, or Sisters in Islam. These are all partner organizations besides, you know, being in the steering committee, where they are the ones who have gone and selected the witnesses and the women. So they are also there to give support. Besides psychological support, they are also there not just providing the witnesses, but they're there to provide the moral support too.
And I'm also wondering, you know, when it comes to you know, this tribunal, the testimonies and the witnesses, are they going to be naming people? Is that part of this? I'm just to get a better picture of what will happen on that day. I'm wondering, when they are giving their testimonies, will they also be saying like, this person from here did this to me, or are they going to be keeping that part anonymous?
Yeah, no, some will and some will not.
Right.
Okay. You know, it all depends on the level of security, the level of comfort of each witness. So do register to come and listen to see, find out. But it is not a naming and shaming exercise.
Right.
It's really just talking about what was the impact of that violation on this particular woman. What did she, how did she deal with it? And what help could she have had that wasn't given to her? At the end of the day, you know, the state, i.e. the government, is there, is obliged. There is an obligation of the state to provide support and protection for any women in Malaysia suffering any form of discrimination.
On the show with me today are activists Ivy Josiah and Grizel Janarun, some of the organizers of the upcoming Women's Tribunal Malaysia. After the break, I'll be asking them if our legal framework here in Malaysia does enough to protect women. We'll be back with more on Live and Learn, BFM 89.9. Welcome back to Live and Learn. I'm Dashran Johan, and on the show with me today are Ivy Josiah and Grizel Janarun, some of the organizers of the upcoming Women's Tribunal Malaysia, which is what we're talking about right now. Now, Ivy, do you think there's a lack of awareness among the Malaysian public as far as women's rights and women's, you know, when it comes to issues of how women are being affected, how women can be vulnerable in many circumstances? Do you think there's an awareness among the Malaysian public when it comes to these things?
Yeah, that was one of the reasons why I mooted this idea, and the women's groups also got excited about it. You know, sadly, I mean, if I look back at all my work for the past 30 years, I mean, I always speak on my behalf. I think it's very much very Klang Valley based. Everybody is always saying, oh, grief, you know, you keep talking to the same people over and over again. Now, the Women's Tribunal, because it's online, this is one of the things about online, because anybody, anywhere can access it.
Right.
You don't have to travel to Kuala Lumpur to see this, right? This is possibly the first online tribunal in the world. All the other tribunals were held in a physical space, and people had to travel to Japan or travel to Geneva and Vienna to, you know, to witness these tribunals. So, yeah, so one of the main ideas, one main motivation to have this tribunal, especially since it's online, is to really influence and raise public awareness beyond the Klang Valley. I would say not everybody in Malaysia is aware of all the different forms of discrimination that women face. Till this day, I still get people saying, what do you mean we're not equal citizens? What do you mean it's difficult to get child maintenance? Why wouldn't it be? That's a court order, right? So people don't realize what are the different obstacles. So, yeah, we right. are very aware, but at the same time, not necessarily nationwide.
Grizel, what do you think? Because you are a representative, you come from an NGO called Sabah Women's Action Resource Group. What do you feel that there is a gap when it comes to awareness about women's rights or women's issues or the violations that the safety issues, the violations they may face, things like that? Do you think there's a gap when it comes to awareness between, let's say, Klang Valley and compared to, outside of the Klang Valley?
So, yes, I agree with Ivy. Not many people in not all Malaysian are aware of the women's rights issues. And there is a gap between Klang Valley and the rest of the communities who are not English speaking. And in Sabah particularly, many are not English speaking, and many information may not reach to all parts of Sabah. And that is why the Women's Tribunal involved women and girls from Sabah and Sarawak to listen to their stories and their experiences, because the diverse communities and also the geographical factors causes that not many information reaches all the communities. Therefore, we want to hear the stories from the women and the girls from these communities so that the rest of us also are aware that these issues, these discriminations happen to women.
Hmm.
And I want to remind the listeners that I know this interview, everything is in English, right? But at the tribunal, it will be presented in Bahasa Malaysia and English. There will be translations. If someone is speaking English, it'll be in Bahasa. If someone's speaking in Bahasa, it'll be English. And we also have a sign language printer too. So we wanted really, what Grizel was talking about, inclusive. We want to make sure we are inclusive.
I think that's absolutely fantastic. Now, the fact that this tribunal even exists shows, perhaps, highlights a lack of proper legal framework in our country, right, Ivy? But I guess I have to ask, is our legal framework good enough? I mean, as far as women's rights are concerned, it feels like we keep talking about these issues over and over again, but is our legal framework sufficient?
Well, first of all, the supreme law of the land, which is mm-hmm. the federal constitution, there is formal equality. It recognizes formal equality. Article right. 3 of the federal constitution. Let me start over again. Okay. First of all, let's be assured that the supreme law of this land, that is the federal constitution, does recognize formal equality. That is in Article 8. So, we can say the Constitution provides us and protects us, and it recognizes equality between men and women, right?
Mm-hmm.
But, however, this is not translating into actual policy, it's into actual practice.
Right.
So while we may have, while we may have it in the Constitution, there's no law that says, like a gender equality law, this is one of the laws that we are fighting for. We should have a gender equality law so that it translates Article 8 into a practical law. Furthermore, we must also understand we have acceded to the Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Discrimination Against Women. We have an international standard and we have acceded to it. That means we need to domesticate it. We need to domesticate our commitment to CEDAW and make sure there's a law, a domestic law that recognizes equality. There's also one more piece of good news. Many judges in the various judgments have also said that we mustn't say that we cannot subscribe to international law. Once you accede to an international treaty that sets has very high standards, that has sets the standards, we must then also change the laws nationally in the domestic scenario and make sure it reflects the international standards. And quite a number of judges have also said that we should do that.
What laws do you think we need? Like if you have, you know, things that are of prime importance when it comes to women's rights, what do we need like ASAP?
Okay, yeah. So one of the laws that we need as soon as possible is actually the sexual harassment bill. As I think we know that sexual harassment is very harmful to women and girls and the whole of society. And sexual harassment is actually very prevalent in Malaysia. And I think we can go and check out WAO's Women AIDS Organization data in terms of the prevalence of sexual harassment. And we believe that the existing laws are actually inadequate to address sexual harassment. Therefore, I think that's one of the laws that we need as soon as possible.
Ivy, are there any other laws you think we need?
Anti-stalking bill, it should be included in the penal code, and the women's groups have been talking about this forever. What about the most recent, again, judges have come up with really good judgments. Recently, the court has recognize the fact that both mothers and fathers are equal citizens and that they have the rights to confer citizenship on their children. So the judge has said it's very clear. We look at the Constitution, there shouldn't be any discrimination. But again, this has to be translated into a law. You have to change the law, the family law, and so on. You may have to change some parts of the Constitution to reflect this judgment, to reflect this principle. So, you know, but unfortunately, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs is saying that they do not want to recognize, they're hesitant to recognize that Malaysian mothers are able to confer citizenship if their children are born overseas, whereas a Malaysian father can. So that is a really very urgent law, because there's been a lot of advocacy, a lot of mothers, a lot of Malaysian mothers and their children have been pleading to say, make the children citizens. They shouldn't have to wait and go through many, many loopholes. They should automatically be citizens, just like the way the Malaysian father can confer citizenship if his foreign wife gives birth overseas.
Ivy, what do you think? Because you've been, doing this for ages and ages and ages, right? What is the problem actually? Because when you, like you mentioned, broadly speaking, the Constitution or the spirit of the Constitution is pretty fair. It embraces equality and all of that. And then, you know, Malaysia is very, very happy to sign this international treaty and that international treaty and all of those international treaties. But then it doesn't actually translate to actual applicable laws. So what exactly is the problem here?
Okay, I want to make two points. Okay, first of all, very recently, we know that Malaysia is now a member of the Human Rights Council.
That's right.
We play a very good game at the international stage. You know, we say all the right things. We accede to the Treaty on Women. We have also signed on the Treaty on Disabilities. We have signed on to a Treaty on Children. So we are saying to the global stage, yes, we want to aspire. We want to make sure that these standards, these human rights standards, are enjoyed by the people of Malaysia. But unfortunately, it's all in the implementation, isn't it? You can say one thing in Geneva, you can say one thing in New York, but when you come back home, how are you making that a reality? And there is a state obligation. We need to keep using the word state obligation over and over again. There is a due diligence. So what earlier on you asked, what are the obstacles, right? And I talked about authorities, powerful authorities who tend to suppress women's voices. But I also think that there is this attitude among lawmakers, among from the cabinet to the parliament to the political parties that make up the laws to all the agencies that implement the laws, there's also a prevailing attitude where they actually believe that women are lesser. You know, there is, as I said, I use the word sexism, misogyny, but it's basically an attitude where we do not accept that women and men are equals, that we do not look at women as equals. So in the translation, and when you start implementing in practice, you at the end of the day have people who are then interpreting and saying, oh, no, 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 I don't believe that women must be equal citizens. I don't believe that women must be equal guardians. No, 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 you follow your husband. You cannot give confer citizenship. The Malaysian man can. So the attitude, the culture of, we call it the culture of the law, the attitude seeps in direction. And that's where this is the biggest, obstacle. The attitudes, the perspectives, your religious beliefs, your cultural beliefs that get in the way. But you cannot, the government cannot say what to do. Our people all believe it. You know, they are very conservative. They're old fashioned. We need to make sure that everybody is agreeable. No. When you sign on to CEDAW, or when you sign on to all these treaties, what you're also saying is the government has an obligation and they must recognize the obligation to change the prevailing attitudes, to change the stereotype thinking. That is the duty of the government too. It is clearly stated in Article 5 of CEDAW, there must be cultural change. And we are obliged, the state is obliged, civil society, private sector, all of them are obliged to bring about this change. Enough said.
Certainly. I think it's very important that we address these issues. And yeah, you know, it's all these patriarchal sort of attitudes and all of that has got to go. Now, you know,
that's a good word. I forgot the word patriarchy. I forgot two words, patriarchy and the resistance that's coming out from the feminist movement. Yeah.
Yeah, certainly. Now, let's circle back to these to the tribunal itself. The event is happening on the 27th and 28th of November. Grizel, how can people participate? How can they watch? How can they, if they want to ask questions, just get involved in this, keep up with all the news heading towards as we build up towards the tribunal? Where should people go?
Yeah. So as mentioned earlier, the Women's Tribunal is open to everyone, to all members of the public, and it can be accessed via Facebook Live on the day of the tribunal itself. And I think Ivan mentioned that it will be in dual language, in both Bahasa Malaysia and English. So I'll just share the website. Please join us by registering in our website at womenstribunalmalaysia.com. And our website is also in dual language, so it can be viewed in both Bahasa and English. And you can find all the information about the Women's Tribunal, such as what is the tribunal and why we're having it. Even there's even a map of previous Women's Tribunal held all over the world, and our official video, the women's issues, and so much more. And also, just to promote, do check out our social media platforms. And there will be updates and even explainer series. And our handle is Women Tribunal MY. And you can find us in Twitter, Facebook, and also Instagram.
When you register, you're not only registering to watch the tribunal, which is the 27th and 28th of November. And then on the 4th of December, the judges will come online again to reveal their findings and recommendations. Now, on the 30th, there's a very exciting event. It is the Arts Festival, Kebahagiaan Mu Arts Festival. And this festival is just for us to enjoy. There are going to be performances. There's going to be song and dance. Yes, we're going to dance online. And when you register for the Kebahagiaan Diri Mu Festival, you can also possibly win a hamper worth about almost ringgit. So do register. You can win a prize. This is for the arts festival.
Okay. As we wrap this conversation up, a final message from both of y'all. When it comes to women's rights, women's issues, the need to give space for women to be able to come out and speak up. Why are all of these things important? Let's start with you, Grizel. Final message.
Yeah, again, it's very important that we reach out far and wide to get as many people participating as much as we can. Mm-hmm. Because women's issues is everybody's issues, and it is a political issues, and we should be speaking up about it more openly and creating more spaces for women and girls to share their experiences. So I think I'd like to invite everybody, do help us to share out about the Women's Tribunal to all family and friends.
Ivy?
Women make up half of Malaysia. We are relevant. We are equal. Recognize that we are equal citizens. Recognize that we are equal human beings. Support the Women's Tribunal. Please register and watch.
On that note, Ivy, Grizel, thank you so much for joining me today. I've been speaking with Ivy Josiah, convener of the Women's Tribunal, and Grizel Janarun, presiding officer of the Women's Tribunal, which is a virtual event which will be held on the 27th and 28th of November. So if you missed any part of the show, you can check us out on podcasts. We are available on the BFM app, bfm.my, or pretty much wherever you get your podcasts from. I'm Dashrin Johan, and this has been Live and Learn, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.